listening.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
On today's program, you will hear reports from John Russell and Brian Lynn. Faith Perlow presents this week's Ask a Teacher. We close with an American story. This week, it is part one of The Fall of the House of Usher. But first, prisoners in Bolivia have been given a new way to reduce their jail time. They can gain freedom earlier by reading books. The government program is called Books Behind Bars. It offers detainees a chance to get out of jail days or weeks ahead of their release date. The program is modeled after a similar effort in Brazil. The aim is to improve reading ability. It is also meant to give hope to inmates who face Bolivia's slow judicial process. The program has been launched in 47 prisons that do not have money to pay for education or social assistance programs for prisoners. So far, 865 inmates are taking part in the program. One of them is Jacqueline. She has already read 8 books in a year and has passed 4 reading tests. It is really hard for people like us who have no income and who do not have family outside, she said. There are people here, for example, who are just learning how to read and write. Nadia Cruz is with Bolivia's Ombudsman's Office. She said the aim is to encourage inmates waiting for the trial process to begin. The group Human Rights Watch says the country's prisons and jails are overcrowded and unhealthy. Some detainees have protested over the lack of health care. With these difficulties, learning to read can be like escaping the prison walls, at least for the mind. That is the case for Mildred, an inmate at the Obrajes Women's Prison in the capital of La Paz. "When I read, I am in contact with the whole universe," Mildred said. The walls and bars disappear.
A new arrival to the Luiro Primates Rehabilitation Center gives a brief hug to his human rescuer. Then, the young chimpanzee is gone, off to play in a much securer home than his last. Conservation workers in the Democratic Republic of Congo recently removed the wild animal from illegal captivity. The team traveled hundreds of kilometers with the chimp to the center. It is a protected place, or sanctuary, for primates separated from their parents. The center opened about 20 years ago in the Congolese village of Luiro. There are more than 100 chimpanzees at the sanctuary today. Democratic Republic of Congo and neighboring Congo Republic are home to the largest number of great apes in Africa. But most great ape populations are decreasing from forest loss, hunting, and trafficking, says a recent report from the Great Apes Survival Partnership, GRASP. illegal hunters, or poachers, seek young primates to sell to zoos or individuals. The poachers often kill a whole chimpanzee family to capture one young member, conservationists say. Itzaso Velez del Burgo is the Luiro Center's director. It's horrible because the year 2021 was the worst year in the history of our center. We had 15 arrivals, she said. She added, and you have to think that for every chimpanzee that arrives here at the sanctuary, there are 10 more that died in the forest. The situation is serious. If we don't act to protect the forest, soon it will be empty. The United Nations says that poachers can sell a live chimpanzee for $50 to $100. But later the animals can be marketed again at far higher prices. In eastern Congo, violence has made it hard to release the apes back into the wild in a process known as reintegration. Reintegration is the sanctuary's goal, Claude Sylvestre Lebaku, manager of the center, said. There are already groups of apes that are ready to be reintegrated, but the presence of armed groups in the forest is blocking us, Lebaku said. There has been a resurgence of some armed groups in eastern Congo in recent years, leading the government to declare martial law in parts of the east. Although there is no evidence that the illegal trade in great apes is linked to armed groups, their presence in the forest still presents a threat, said Johannes Refisch of the United Nations-led GRASP. I would agree that the apes are more at risk when there are more guns around, he said. There is a higher risk for wild meat hunting, and even in areas where great apes are not targeted, hunters might bump into a gorilla and kill the animals because they feel threatened. I'm John Russell.
A new hydrogen-powered passenger boat is preparing to launch in San Francisco, California. Builders of the 75-passenger boat, or ferry, say it produces no carbon emissions. The ferry, named Sea Change, is set to begin carrying passengers across San Francisco Bay to several stops in the city in June. The ferry is completely powered by hydrogen fuel cells. In this kind of power system, the fuel cells convert hydrogen gas into electricity. Sea Change was built at the All-American Marine Shipyard in Bellingham in Washington State. It has been undergoing tests with the U.S. Coast Guard in nearby Puget Sound. The project was financed by Switch Maritime, which owns the Sea Change. The company's chief executive, Pace Rally, told Reuters the ferry is the first such vessel in the world to be completely powered by hydrogen fuel cells. Rally said he got the idea for the ferry while trying to come up with new ways to use less carbon in the maritime industry. He learned of a state-supported project in California that was developing hydrogen fuel cells as a method for decarbonizing ships. So we joined up with them and funded their project in 2019, Raleigh said. The leader of the All-American Marines Project is Jeff Sokolik. He said the hydrogen fuel cells power two propellers that move the ferry at a top speed of about 37 kilometers an hour. He told Reuters he thinks the fuel cell power systems could one day become a new standard for many kinds of ships. He said they're clean, they're efficient, and they make sense economically. Supporters of hydrogen fuel cells say the technology is cleaner than other carbon-cutting methods because the process only releases water and heat. But the high cost and large fuel cell systems have so far limited use of the technology. We're focused on the shipping industry because that's where we have expertise. But I don't think any industry can really wait at this point, Raleigh said. He added that he thinks the Sea Change project can lead to more hydrogen fuel cell vessels, including larger ferries, cruise ships, and tankers. I'm Brian Lynn.
Hello. This week on Ask a Teacher, we will continue to answer Errol's question about learning new words by using suffixes to create adjectives and adverbs. Hello, my name is Errol. What is the best way of learning words? I am very confused about this subject. Can you give me some advice about learning words, please? Last week, we looked at creating nouns and verbs by adding suffixes to words. Now we will create adjectives and adverbs with suffixes. Words that add meaning to a sentence are known as content words. Content words often appear as one of the four major parts of speech: nouns, verbs, adjectives, and adverbs. Let us look at an example with all four major parts of speech. The orange cat cried loudly. The adjective orange describes the color of the cat, which is the noun. Loudly is the adverb that describes the verb cry in the past tense. We add suffixes to the end of the base form of a word to change the part of speech. This way, we can create several words from the base form in English. To change some nouns into adjectives, we can use several endings: full, less, e, ul, ick, and ickle. For example, beauty plus suffix full equal beautiful. Change the y to I and add the suffix full. The suffix full means having the quality of the noun. Emotion plus suffix less equal emotionless. The suffix less means without. Rain plus suffix e equal rainy. The suffix e means to be characterized by. Organization plus suffix ul equal organizational. Keep the noun suffix ation and add ul, the adjective ending. This suffix means relating to. History plus suffix ick equal historic. Remove the Y and add the suffix ic. This word means important or famous in history. History plus suffix ical equal historical. Remove the Y and add the suffix. This word means relating to history or past events. Let us move on to making adjectives from verbs. To turn some verbs into adjectives, we can use the suffixes iv, ius, ing, id, in, and able. For example, create plus suffix iv equal creative. Drop the e and add the suffix. Study plus suffix ius equal studious. Drop the y and add the suffix. Sometimes participles are used as adjectives. These adjectives can have a sense of either continuation or completion. For example, cry plus suffix ing equal crying. Keep the y and add the suffix. An example sentence is, the crying baby did not sleep all night. Shake plus suffix in equal shaken. An example of this suffix is, I often drink teas shaken with milk. Lastly, for making adjectives from verbs, we have the suffix able. It means able or possible to do. Break plus suffix able equal breakable. This word means able to be broken. Finally, many adjectives become adverbs by adding the suffix -ly. Creative plus suffix -ly equal creatively. Now let us complete the chart from last week that lists possible words you can make by adding suffixes. Understanding suffixes can be a path to quickly learning a lot of new content words. What question do you have about American English? Send us an email at learningenglish@voanews.com. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Faith Perlow.
Fall of the House of Usher, Part 1. It was a dark and soundless day, near the end of the year, and clouds were hanging low in the heavens. All day I'd been riding on horseback through country with little life or beauty, and in the early evening I came within view of the House of Usher. I do not know how it was, but with my first sight of the building, a sense of heavy sadness filled my spirit. I looked at the scene before me, at the house itself, at the ground around it, at the cold stone walls of the building, at its empty eye-like windows, and at a few dead trees. I looked at this scene, I say, with a complete sadness of soul, which was no healthy earthly feeling. There was a coldness, a sickening of heart, in which I could discover nothing to lighten the weight I felt. What was it, I asked myself, what was it that was so fearful, so frightening in my view of the House of Usher? This was a question to which I could find no answer. I stopped my horse beside the building, on the edge of a dark and quiet lake. There I could see reflected in the water a clear picture of the dead trees and of the house and its empty eye-like windows. I was now going to spend several weeks in this house of sadness, this house of gloom. Its owner was named Roderick Usher. We had been friends when we were boys, but many years had passed since our last meeting. A letter from him had reached me, a wild letter which demanded that I reply by coming to see him. He wrote of an illness of body, of a sickness of the mind, and of a desire to see me, his best, and indeed his only friend. It was the manner in which all this was said, it was the heart in it, which did not allow me to say no. Although as boys we'd been together, I really knew little about my friend. I knew, however, that his family, a very old one, had long been famous for its understanding of all the arts, and for many quiet acts of kindness to the poor. I had learned, too, that the family had never been a large one, with many branches. The name had passed always from father to son, and when people spoke of the house of Usher, they included both the family and the family home. I again looked up from the picture of the house reflected in the lake to the house itself. A strange idea grew in my mind, an idea so strange that I tell it only to show the force of the feelings which had laid their weight on me. I really believe that around the whole house, and the ground around it, the air itself was different. It was not the air of heaven. It rose from the dead, decaying trees, from the gray walls and the quiet lake. It was a sickly, unhealthy air that I could see, slow-moving, heavy and gray. Shaking off from my spirit what must have been a dream, I looked more carefully at the building itself. The most noticeable thing about it seemed to be its great age. None of the walls had fallen, yet the stones appeared to be in a condition of advanced decay. Perhaps the careful eye would have discovered the beginning of a break in the front of the building, a crack making its way from the top down the wall until it became lost in the dark waters of the lake. I rode over a short bridge to the house. A man who worked in the house, a servant, took my horse, and I entered. Another servant of quiet step led me without a word through many dark turnings to the room of his master. Much that I met on the way added, I do not know how, to the strangeness of which I have already spoken. While the objects around me, the dark wall coverings, the blackness of the floors, and the things brought home from long-forgotten wars, while these things were like the things I had known since I was a baby, while I admitted that all this was only what I had expected, I was still surprised at the strange ideas which grew in my mind from these simple things. The room I came into was very large and high. The windows were high and pointed at the top, so far above the black floor that they were quite out of reach. Only a little light, red in color, made its way through the glass and served to lighten the nearer and larger objects. My eyes, however, tried and failed to see into the far high corners of the room. Dark coverings hung upon the walls. The many chairs and tables had been used for a long, long time. Books lay around the room, but could give it no sense of life. I felt sadness hanging over everything. No escape from this deep, cold gloom seemed possible. As I entered the room, Usher stood up from where he had been lying and met me with a warmth which, at first, I could not believe was real. A look, however, at his face told me that every word he spoke was true. We sat down, and for some moments, while he said nothing, I looked at him with a feeling of sad surprise. Surely no man had ever before changed as Roderick Usher had. Could this be the friend of my early years? It is true that his face had always been unusual. He had gray-white skin, eyes large and full of light, lips not bright in color, but of a beautiful shape, a well-shaped nose, hair of great softness, a face that was not easy to forget. And now the increase in this strangeness of his face had caused so great a change that I almost did not know him. The horrible white of his skin and the strange light in his eyes surprised me and even made me afraid. His hair had been allowed to grow, and in its softness it did not fall around his face, but seemed to lie upon the air. I could not even with an effort see in my friend the appearance of a simple human being. In his manner I saw at once changes came and went, and I soon found that this resulted from his attempt to quiet a very great nervousness. I had, indeed, been prepared for something like this, partly by his letter and partly by remembering him as a boy. His actions were first too quick and then too quiet. Sometimes his voice, slow and trembling with fear, quickly changed to a strong, heavy, carefully spaced, too perfectly controlled manner. It was in this manner that he spoke of the purpose of my visit, of his desire to see me, and of the deep delight and strength he expected me to give him. He told me what he believed to be the nature of his illness. It was, he said, a family sickness, and one from which he could not hope to grow better. But it was, he added at once, only a nervous illness which would, without doubt, soon pass away. It showed itself in a number of strange feelings. Some of these, as he told me of them, interested me, but were beyond my understanding. Perhaps the way in which he told me of them added to their strangeness. He suffered much from a sickly increase in the feeling of all his senses. He could eat only the most tasteless food. All flowers smelled too strongly for his nose. His eyes were hurt by even a little light, and there were few sounds which did not fill him with horror. A certain kind of sick fear was completely his master. "I shall die," he said. "I shall die. I must die of this fool sickness. In this way and no other way, I shall be lost. I fear what will happen in the future, not for what happens, but for the result of what happens. I have indeed no fear of pain, but only fear of its result, of terror. I feel that my time will soon arrive when I must lose my life and my mind and my soul together in some last battle with that horrible enemy, fear."
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.